this may be the only project that is viable that pencils out that we can actually build.
State lawmakers push to elevate an in-state gas line plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Bristol Bay ballot initiative heads back to court.
The ordinance that was passed by the public will be defended by the borough. And if the judge rules against us, we will appeal it to the Supreme Court.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Alaska State Troopers have confirmed that a woman and her two children died when their car ran off the Glen Highway north of Palmer and ended up in a pond next to Long Lake. From KCHU in Valdez, Tony Gorman reports.
Alaska State Troopers received a report of a rollover crash near mile 86 of the Glen Highway Thursday afternoon. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says Leah Thompson of Valdez was traveling southbound with her children, 5-year-old Avery and 7-year-old Trinity McIntosh, when she lost control of her Toyota Ford Runner and rolled once. She says troopers arrived on scene to find the overturned SUV partially submerged.
There were a lot of first responders that went to the scene to help. They were able to extract the two children from the car, and they attempted CPR. They transported the children to the hospital, but unfortunately they did not survive the incident.
The 28-year-old Thompson was pronounced dead at the scene. Peter says road conditions were not safe at the time of the accident.
It was near whiteout conditions. The wind was blowing pretty hard. So it certainly wasn't ideal situations for driving.
The crash remains under investigation. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
House Speaker Mike Chenault is calling for the House and Senate to increase the profile of an in-state natural gas line dedicated to providing energy to Alaskans. In 2010, Chenault sponsored a bill setting up the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, or AGDC. He says it's time for the work of that group to be expanded. Chenault says the project to build a gas line through Canada for North American markets, known as AGEA, appears to be stalled. And Governor Parnell has only just recently called for more consideration of a line that would provide liquefied natural gas for export to Pacific Rim countries. Either of those projects would have provided access to gas for use in Alaska.
I don't want to call it a backup line because I think it might be the only viable option that we actually have to bring gas to the citizens of Alaska. Some people might call it a backup line. They may call it Plan B. But I think the project is moving forward. And at the end of the day, this may be the only project that is viable that pencils out that we can actually build.
Chenault says there are three House bills in the Senate right now relating to an in-state gas line, and he is currently working on a fourth measure to introduce next year. That bill, currently under discussion, would allow AGDC to take steps to determine ownership of the line, avoid some technical requirements of the Regulatory Commission, and speed up the right-of-way process. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker, who has been working with Chenault on the plan, says there is nothing yet fixed in the project or in the legislation they will introduce.
I know everything that we've been working on is really about removing government impediments to letting the marketplace, letting commercial interests work to bring together a project that actually gets the gas to consumers. We're not doing anything here that dictates any kind of final organization, any kind of final structure, any kind of a final ownership structure. But we want to remove impediments to letting the market determine those things as a market most effectively and efficiently can.
The House bills that Chenault says are in the Senate all passed near the end of the session and are waiting for hearings in various committees. One would establish a set-aside fund to cover the expenses of AGDC. Another would exempt some of the corporation's work from the Public Records Act. And the final one would limit judicial review for the pipeline's right-of-way or construction of a project. The bill Chenault and Hawker are working on is expected to be ready for introduction at the start of next year's session. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Northwest Campus in Nome now has an interim director. Last Friday, Lee Hagen resigned, and later this month she will go to court, having admitted to sending marijuana to herself back in October. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
According to court documents, the Western Alaska Alcohol and Narcotics Team intercepted a package October 12th addressed to Lee Hagen, the director for the Rural Campus in Nome. The package had the odor of marijuana, and troopers found exactly that, in glass jars and also in what appeared to be marijuana pills. Troopers measured 54.9 grams, or just under 2 ounces, of marijuana. According to the trooper affidavit, Hagen admitted to sending the package to herself from Denver, Colorado. Part of the marijuana was packaged in a bag from a medical marijuana supplier, although Hagen said she did not buy the marijuana from there. She said she did not have a medical marijuana card, but was researching how to get one for medical problems. Hagen faces a felony charge for manufacturing, delivering, or possessing, with the intent to manufacture or deliver 1 or more ounces of a controlled substance. Hagen is due in court November 15th for arraignment and will be represented by attorney Lance Wells. Hagen, as the director of the Northwest Campus that serves 15 villages on and surrounding the Seward Peninsula, had built solid partnerships with the region's school districts and regional organizations. She also spurred an extensive campus renovation and increased student enrollment. UAF Vice Chancellor Bernice Joseph says Hagen brought in substantial federal grant awards, $6.7 million from the U.S. Department of Education. Longtime Nomite and 20-year employee of the Northwest Campus, Bob Metcalf, is now the interim director. UAF Vice Chancellor Bernice Joseph will be working with the campus staff to come up with a search committee that will review the position for the Northwest Campus director. After that, they will begin advertising. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kanin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, facing the challenges of elder care in remote villages.
Can you imagine going into a home where the person has incontinence issues? You don't have running water. You have to clean them up.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The Alaska Appeals Court has upheld murder convictions against an Anchorage woman in the death of her three sons. Cynthia Lord was convicted of 3 counts of first-degree murder in the 2004 shooting deaths of son Christopher, Michael, and Joseph. A judge in the non-jury trial found her guilty but mentally ill. Lord's attorney argued she was not guilty by reason of insanity, and in her appeal said Judge Philip Voland erred in his verdict. The legislature in the early 1980s limited the circumstances under which a defendant could be acquitted using an insanity defense. Lord's attorney also argued state laws related to the defense of insanity are unconstitutional. The appeals court today said Voland's findings are supported by the case record, and it upheld the constitutionality of the laws. It's been a week since the state dropped charges against members of Fairbanks militia group accused of plotting against the government. The failed prosecution has raised questions about what went wrong in the joint federal-state investigation. As KUAC's Dan Ross reports, the collapse of the state's case revolved around search warrants and secret recordings.
State murder, conspiracy, and other charges were dropped against Schaefer Cox and four other members of the Peacemakers militia he led following a judge's ruling which disallowed the use of warrantless secret recordings to prosecute them. Alaska Assistant Attorney General Dwayne McConnell says when the state joined the case last February, it was late in a multi-month federal investigation, and it was decided to seek search warrants after the fact.
The process after the state got in was that we would obtain search warrants for the federal recordings, and the federal government would turn them over in that capacity.
The federal government is not required to have search warrants to make secret recordings, but the Alaska Constitution has been interpreted to require warrants and probable cause. McConnell can't explain why the state didn't get search warrants to ensure use of at least the last month of recordings before the operation wrapped up March 10th with the arrest of the militia members.
I think that's an unanswered question because of the federal involvement and the federal government basically running the operation and the state assisting. So I don't think there's an answer to that I can give you.
McConnell says the state works with the FBI regularly, but that the militia investigation and its use of informants was very unusual. The state was banking on case law involving use of evidence from other states. McConnell says Alaska courts have allowed evidence that's legal in other states but illegal in Alaska to be used here.
The Alaska court system, the appellate court and the Supreme Court said, you know, that's allowable. All right. So this is a bit of a twist, you know, a bit different.
McConnell, who says he joined the investigation late in the game, does not blame the state or FBI for not anticipating the potential impact to state prosecution of not seeking Alaska search warrants early on. But he says a lesson has been learned.
That when the federal government and the state government are going to make a decision to prosecute on both the state and the federal level, that then, yes, those decisions would be made, that, you know, warrants would be obtained.
Assistant U.S. Attorney Steve Scrocky would not comment on events leading up to the state's failed prosecution. It's resulted in one militia member being freed, but Cox and three others, Coleman Barney and Lonnie and Karen Vernon, remain jailed in Fairbanks on federal charges. Scrocky says there are essentially two cases.
The first case against Mr. Cox, Mr. Vernon, and Mr. Barney are directly related to illegal weapons possession and the illegal acquisition of weapons, namely grenades and silencers. The other case is only against Mr. Vernon and his wife, Karen. In that case, is charging them with conspiracy to commit murder, in summary, against a federal court judge, Judge Beislein, and members of his family.
Scrocky says the weapons charges carry up to 10-year sentences, while the murder conspiracy charges are much more serious, punishable by up to 99 years in prison. He says other charges may still be brought. The militia members are scheduled for trial in February in Anchorage. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The legal saga involving the Fairbanks North Star Borough's involvement in a case challenging the state's new redistricting plan continues. Yesterday, State Superior Court Judge Michael McConaughey allowed the borough to drop its claim in the multi-party challenge. The borough petitioned the court to dismiss following an assembly vote to get out last month when panel members expressed concern about mounting legal costs. The borough still believes in the case, which challenges the inclusion of some Fairbanks residents in rural voting districts. The borough will remain involved as a friend of the court. The redistricting case is scheduled for trial in January. The Save Our Salmon initiative is back in court on Monday. Lake and Peninsula Borough voters passed the initiative, which aims to stop the development of the Pebble Mine by a narrow margin last month. Now a judge will hold a hearing on whether the ordinance is constitutional. KDLG's Daisha Eaton has more.
The Save Our Salmon initiative, which passed last month, attempts to give the Lake and Peninsula Borough authority to prevent any large development that would harm salmon or salmon habitat. The initiative is aimed squarely at Pebble Mine. The Pebble Partnership, the company developing the mine near Lake Iliamna, will eventually need permits within the borough to continue work. This past summer, the company filed a lawsuit against the borough attempting to stop the initiative from going before voters. Pebble's attorney Matt Singer argued before a Superior Court judge in an Anchorage courtroom that the initiative should not go before voters for three reasons.
Because it's unenforceable as a matter of law, because it is special legislation, and because it is administrative rather than legislative.
And the attorney for the Lake and Peninsula Borough argued that the borough had followed procedure correctly in filing the initiative and that it should go before the voters. Aisha Tinker Bray, the borough's attorney, expressing hope that the initiative could avoid too much time in court.
I actually do agree with Pebble and the court that I would love to have pre-election review of all of this so we do not have to come back and visit you in a couple months.
Bray did not get her wish. Judge John Suttick ruled the vote could go forward, but he withheld his decision on whether the initiative was constitutional. That means, despite passing, the initiative could still be invalidated if it is found to be in conflict with the state's constitution. After the Superior Court case, the initiative went to the Alaska Supreme Court, where the higher court affirmed the lower court's decision. In early October, the Lake and Penn voters passed the initiative by a narrow margin, just 34 votes. Then the state of Alaska stepped in and filed a constitutional challenge to it. The state's lawsuit alleges that the borough ordinance is invalid because it tilts the constitutional balance between state and local interests. Alaska's Attorney General John Burns says the Alaska Constitution gives the legislature the authority to determine how to develop resources for maximum use consistent with the public interest.
You know, if you go and you look at Alaska's Constitution, Article 8 expressly mandates that the state legislature has exclusive authority over the state's natural resources. And with that, there's a corollary responsibility to ensure that those resources, which include land and waters, are used, developed, and conserved for the maximum benefit of Alaskans.
That's not the responsibility of boroughs, Attorney General Burns emphasizes. It's unclear whether the new lawsuit by the Attorney General's office will be rolled into the one filed by the Pebble Partnership. Lamar Cotton is the manager of the Lake and Peninsula Borough. He says the borough has a duty to defend the will of the voters and is ready to stand by the initiative for the long haul.
The ordinance that was passed by the public will be defended by the borough. And if the judge rules against us, we will appeal it to the Supreme Court. If the judge rules with us, our sense would be that Pebble and the state of Alaska would take it to the Supreme Court. And in both cases, we'd be there to defend the vote taken by the people and the law created by the people.
A law that will be examined very closely for its legality. Dr. Gerald Macbeth is the professor of political science at University of Alaska Fairbanks. He's an expert on environmental issues and the Alaska Constitution. He's doubtful the initiative will hold up in court.
The initiative that has gone forward to the voters and has been approved by a narrow majority is not constitutional. That's not within a borough's power. The Lake and Penn Borough Authority and its voters cannot, in fact, say no. That's my take on it.
Macbeth says whether it stands up in court or not, the debate over whether the initiative is constitutional is one all Alaskans should be paying attention to. The fate of the initiative is likely to set legal precedent that will have far-reaching implications when it comes to development projects not just in the Lake and Peninsula Borough, but across the state. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, providing information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Tara Bicknell. This week on AK, caring for elders in remote villages. For Native elders who grew up in rural Alaska, the desire to die at home runs deep. But taking care of elders in rugged and isolated villages is a complicated task. And for many, aging in place is not an option. Reporter Shalise Haas traveled to Eagle on the Upper Yukon to find out what's at stake for Native elders in need of long-term care.
One step down. Yeah. Now a turn.
Matthew Malcolm holds tightly to the arm of his caretaker and friend, Don Thibodeau, right, as they enter the white clapboard building that houses Eagles History Museum.
They said in 1930, they had a population of 54 people here.
That's a lot, so.
You were one of them. You were 5 years old then.
Matthew is now 85 years old. He's one of the last Han Guqin Athabascan elders of Eagle. He grew up here, fishing salmon in the summer, hunting moose and caribou in the fall, and taking dog teams out trapping in the winter. And he always thought he'd die here. But now Matthew is blind and has Alzheimer's disease. He lives at the Denali Center, a long-term care facility in Fairbanks, 370 miles from Eagle. He's only here for a short visit, just 4 days.
He sure wants to be here, even though he's got that Alzheimer's.
Angela Harper is Matthew's sister.
And everybody is happy to see him come back. But I won't want him to come back to live here. To tell you the truth, there is no one to take good care of him.
Eagle is a serene and beautiful place, but it's also a hard place. The road is impassable 9 months of the year. Winter temperatures often reach 40 below. And the only medical care for hundreds of miles is housed in a 3-room, 40-foot trailer. Cindy Nation is the director of the home care program at Tanana Chiefs Conference, the agency that provides health care to Eagle and to villages from Allakaket to Northway.
Can you imagine going into a home where the person has incontinence issues? You don't have running water. You have to clean them up. You have to clean their home up. That means heating water, hauling water, sometimes building the fire in the stove to do those kinds of things.
Such challenges are just part of what makes providing home care difficult in remote villages. Young people continue to leave in search of work, and most state and federal funding for home care services has dried up.
We don't have a hospital, we don't have a doctor, we don't have nurses.
Donna Westfall is a volunteer caretaker.
We have a clinic in the village that has a health practitioner there. We really have nothing here, just someone like me who's willing to help out and take care of people.
In 1998, Tanana Chiefs had 68 trained nursing aides on their payroll. Today, they have none. Cindy Nation says that elders who stay in the village often give up life-extending medical care. But those who leave also make a painful choice.
Our elders want to die at home. An elder told me that their spirits don't rest unless they're able to die at home.
I wish we could do that for Matthew. I wish there was a way to make that work for him.
Donna and her husband used to care for Matthew Malcolm before he moved to the Denali Center.
I mean, I know him very well, and I know that it means the world to him. I mean, it's all he wants to do is to come home.
On this Sunday night, nearly all of Eagle's 150 residents are crowded into the community hall. It's potluck dinner, and people fill their plates with potato salad, moose spaghetti, and salmon bake. Donna and her husband, Barry, sit down beside Matthew at a long table.
You remember Donna, don't you?
Donna.
Kentucky girl, Donna.
Oh, Kentucky.
We're buddies, huh?
In just a few days, Matthew will make the long trip back to Fairbanks. He'll return to his room in the dementia wing at Denali Center, far from the Yukon River and his favorite fishing spot. But tonight, Matthew is making the most of this visit, surrounded by the people he knows best in a place that is both familiar and comforting.
Well, it's so good to see you again, Matthew. It really is. I'm glad you made it to Eagle.
I'll let you know if I catch you the fish.
All right.
Okay.
For AK, I'm Shalise Haas.
Now it's time for our weekly trip around the state. This week, we're going to Aniak on the Kuskokwim River. Our tour guide is Gwendolyn Brock, the preschool teacher in town. She's lived there 32 years with her husband, Thomas, who is the kindergarten teacher, and the mayor.
It's just a beautiful landscape. Of course, naturally, we are an island. We're only accessible by air, so we're surrounded by water, which is the Kuskokwim River. We have a lot of outdoors, a lot of teachers that like to do you know, the skiing and the snowmobiling and, you know, hunting and fishing and this type of thing. And so this is kind of what draws people to our area. One of the really great things I think that's happening is Antioch Traditional Council, they're doing like an elders luncheon or dinner where the elders are invited to attend, and it's just the kind of a way for them to get together and connect with the elders that we have in the community, since we don't really have that many left, especially long-term elders. So I guess they kind of get together and basically show honor and homage to them. We have two local stores, Alaska Commercial Company and one that was started a few years ago called Antioch General Store. And Antioch General Store, I think, is awesome when it comes to trying to service the customer, even though they don't really have a lot of control over the prices, because freight is extremely expensive to get things sent out here. Thomas went to the store one day and got some potatoes, which is really funny because he very rarely shopped at the store. And I needed some potatoes. And so he bought four potatoes. And he came back and he had this puzzled look on his face. And I said, well, what's the problem? He said, I think they made a mistake. And I said, well, what happened? He said, this says $9. And so I started to laugh and I said, that's probably about right. He goes, $9 for four potatoes? A few days ago, when we first got the first snowfall, it was really kind of like a Courier and Ives picture postcard, because the snow was starting to stick to the branches, kind of started to feel kind of Christmassy. But it's a very, very peaceful, beautiful community.
Gwen Brock is a preschool teacher in Antioch. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help this week from Annie Feit and Jaleese Haas, who produced the story on elder care with support from the MetLife Foundation Journalism and Aging Fellowship, a program of New America Media and the Gerontological Society of America. Tune in next week for a story on a group in Anchorage that's working to get a new generation of kids and adults in the state excited about ski jumping. I'm Tara Bicknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Tony Gorman in Valdez, Lorelei Kunin in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Dacia Eaton in Dillingham. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our guest host for AK this week was Tara Bicknell. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Our web editor is Josh Edge. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
And by
Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.